He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our audience about for this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. We are in the early part of the winter cold season, as this show is done, and a couple of things have come across my radar from personal experience. And the first one was I needed to use my windshield washer to clean my windshield on a morning in which the temperature was in single digits and I was flying along the road at 65 to 70 miles an hour, and lo and behold, no fluid came out of the nozzles. And I have had this problem before, and I have washer fluid that is either rated at minus 20 or minus 25 below in all my washer receptacles in the cars that I have. And as far as I can tell, it's fresh enough so that it should not have diminished its resistance to freezing. But I have found that they seem to freeze in the lines between the water bottles where the fluid rests and doesn't seem to freeze, and the nozzles. And either the nozzles get wind chill or the what, I'm not sure quite how it works, but I have found that sometimes I do not get effective windshield washer use in very
cold. Don't some cars have, hey, Robin, don't some cars have
heaters?
Heated nozzles?
It's possibly that they do, but I do not know any domestic vehicles that have actually heated nozzles.
Okay.
I've never seen it on the options list of a window sticker. If they do, Jay, and our listeners, we could find out, and you could go buy cars with this this feature.
Okay.
If it was important. But enough on that. So it is a good thing, I believe, to advise that you test your windshield washer fluid in temperatures that are below 10 degrees consistently, if we have them, or before you start driving, or clean your windshields when the cars are still and presumably the fluid will flow. And if you're in a storm with ultra-cold conditions, you may or may not find that you have reliable windshield washer capability if you need it. Enough on that. Jay, I wanted you to discuss what you know about AI as an article headline that I'm looking at says AI gains ground in the auto industry. You brought it up in one of your lists, and is it the Gemini or something like that, where AI is apparently doing something?
No, there were a couple articles that referred to AI, and one of them, I don't know if I sent you the link, but I actually did not read the article, so I can't tell you much about it. And that was the one, I think, that involved automation in factories, and the question was whether AI was going to replace humans in auto factories. And, you know, to be fair, robots have already
replaced. I think robots are doing that quite effectively.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily relevant for much of the discussion on this show, but I thought if it was in the technological field, I know nothing about it. I'm confronted by lots of AI requests for AI assistance in my real estate business, believe it or not, and online in my cell phone. And I do not know much about AI, and I'm sort of resisting getting involved with it.
So let me say this, you knew anything about it. The other thing I had mentioned is the I read through an article quickly on the new Mazda CX-5.
Right.
You know, their middle-sized SUV.
Okay.
And they have Google's AI feature. What is it called? Gemini.
Yeah.
I guess you can control a bunch of the car controls using
AI assistance.
Correct. And it's voice activation, as far as I can tell.
I guess that's another piece of technology that is encroaching into the newest models of vehicles coming across. A side note is that I have talked to several people recently who are, and they're all, I would say, older people who are still driving actively and are resisting their desire to own a new car because of all the technology, or else they're just ignoring it, and they just say, as far as they can tell, they have all this stuff in their car, but they don't know how to operate it. So as long as they can drive the car, put it in gear, and get the radio to work, and maybe the heating system to work, they're okay, but they wish that they had their older car, which they traded in this case it was a Honda, traded in on a new Hyundai vehicle, and I got an earful about how the owner, who is up in years, is very frustrated because he says his car has all this technology and he doesn't know how to use it, and he doesn't even want to learn how to use it. So there may be a return to some basics in the dashboard facilities of vehicles. I'm waiting to try the new Jeep Cherokee 2026, I think, to replace.
Hold on, before we get into the Jeep chapter of this show. Car controls. I think voice activated car controls are actually a good thing if they're reliable, and I'm guessing that with the advent of AI, most likely we will have systems that are pretty reliable. When you ask certain things, they will, you know, the car will respond, or the features will respond. But I don't know much about it. I do agree with you. We've talked about this ad nauseum in the past. You and I, and a lot of, you know, older people, and we classify as such, don't necessarily like screen and touch screen controls. You know, recently I was in two different cars that have very different approaches, and I've talked about maybe a bit too much in the last couple of shows, is that Porsche Macan Electric that has a center screen that is very not oversized. And it's not only user-friendly, it's not oversized, it's actually integrated totally in the center of the dash. It's not one of those little flat screens or tablets that are stuck on top of the dash. And the other car was, a Tesla Y. And the cars operate in very, very different modes. Even though the Tesla, the one I was in, was 2 or 3 years old, the way you go about things is very different. And you know, I guess not all cars are for all people, although I think in the future, I'm hoping we stay with, you know, a few knobs, like in the Porsche, and I know Honda is doing that too, and not go crazy like in Tesla mode.
I agree with you completely for our audience. I actually can narrow my discussion on this to its topic of knobs to do two things. One, volumize or turn the volume up and down on a radio station that's playing. And two, to manually be able to scroll through the FM stations or the satellite stations with a knob instead of even trying to use voice control. The voice control is actually effective, as you have surmised, and for our audience, that's good for them to know. But I find sometimes I get confused in the vehicles I have that have it, when I try to say, tune to XM radio channel, blah, blah, or tune to 103?
To Robin Hood Radio.
Yeah, Robin Hood Radio or not, and sometimes it doesn't quite take it and get me to it in the first attempt. And I have to vary my input to see which one the computer is going to recognize and lead me to the station or the type of radio I want to listen to. Is it AM, FM, or XM, you know, or satellite, or something else?
Hey, so moving on and talking about Tesla, we know people have different views on the company, on the cars. I've read about a consumer
quality control report
article about quality control and reliability of Teslas, and that you older Teslas seem to come way down in the reliability department, and I'm a little surprised by that. And there have been comments into the methodology used by Consumer Reports, because it is not quite fair to compare a car that doesn't require, and that was a point or the counterpoint, it's not quite fair to compare a car that doesn't require pretty much any maintenance to an ICE car that goes into a shop regularly for maintenance. And therefore, the times you do go in, it's to deal with problems. Yes, you know, we know Tesla has had quality issues in the past, and allegedly they're all gone now. But people who've had Teslas do not believe that the cars are unreliable. And a lot of people have said, you know, that it is the most reliable cars they've owned. And I was reading a comment of one particular user who said, you got to dissociate the car from the company. The car is great. You know, we sold all of our stock but one stock in the company. And you know, that's it.
Okay.
It's still a great product.
Okay. I agree. Let's talk about Consumer Reports, because it's a very important periodical that a lot of people use when they are determining what car they ought to try and buy. I used to get the magazine. I do not get it anymore. I do not personally go to it for a recommendation, because I have a very distinct knowledge base in my head about what I want to own, and I'm not going to go review it through that magazine's reviews. I found, though, over time that most of the time when there was a critical report on vehicles that they were using, that it mostly seemed to deal with the technology of the touchscreens and the ease of use. And this goes back some years. So in the early days of this new technology arriving on our dashboards in cars, there definitely was some lack of suitable pre-testing before it got on the road to confuse users. And they were actually, in my opinion, they were rating cars on the basis of the ease of use of some of this technology more than they were talking about the mechanical reliability of the drivetrains, the lights in the car, and things that don't really fail. So I have left Consumer Reports off of my resource list of things if I'm researching cars, it's not that they're not good, they're relevant to the degree of how they do it, but I think I thought they should have refined their rating by distinctly saying that the rating is because of the technology, and not just, and they might actually do that now. But instead of just rating them without defining exactly why the rating was where it was in a list of maybe, you know, 20 vehicles or something like that.
So in their defense, I would say, you know, their methodology is explained, and it's tedious, it's scientific, I guess, or to the best of my understanding of it. And so you get a bunch of statistics, and they try to sort that out. I think they leave out the emotional factor that we may have for a car or not, and you know how the car feels to us. Particularly, do we like the car? Do we like the way it looks? Do we like how comfortable it is or not? And so that does not, I think, factor in to their analysis much. I also, once in a while, I have my eyebrows go up because I see like the same, like different models within the same product range. Like you take Subarus, for example, which are virtually identical mechanically from one model to another, and therefore, you know, very different test results as far as reliability from one model to another kind of triggers some kind of question mark in my mind. But it's a tool. It's not the only tool, but I guess it is a tool and a good one. But anyway, moving on from Consumer Reports. Where do we go next?
Well, you have a list of that you sent me about, and I suggested you talk about certain numbers on those lists, 1 and 2 and then 6, 7, 8, and 9. I don't know whether that list is up on your screen.
I don't know. I have no numbers, but...
But it was about sales, and one of them was auto sales, and I'll try to pull it up.
The auto industry, I think, is in not a very good shape, and I think it is a worldwide phenomenon. You know, sales are not good in Europe. They're not good in the U.S. They're certainly not good in China. Some companies do better than others. Tesla on the Chinese market is actually increased their sales this year. But they're only selling one in, you know, they're outsold 5-1 by BYD.
Yeah.
So, you know, all those numbers have to be taken with a grain of salt. But the industry is suffering. And we know part of that is that push to EVs that has taken
slowed.
different forms in Europe and in the States, but both have been, you know, somewhat fiscally driven, and the tax advantages that they offer in Europe are not the same as they are at home. But still, this is what has partly driven the electric car market, and it's still not taking off. So now there's all this backtrack. And sales are suffering. But I think there's more to it than that. The economy is not doing all that great. Has been soaring inflation. We've seen the price of cars go up. I think now the average transaction price for cars, and we mentioned $46,000, $47,000. Now it's $50,000
actually in some polls.
And that's up from $38,000 in 2020, I think.
I think you're right. As we were talking about mid-30s to high-30s in around that time frame, and it got into the low-40s, and it's been creeping upward. But there's no question that has an effect on the affordability of new vehicles, for sure. Interest rates for financing cars are not particularly attractive. Leasing is still the way to go because I see ads for leases that are in the between $200 and $300 a month range, and I'm not talking about the exotic cars to our audience on this. I'm talking about basic, a lot of them American iron and good. They're good cars, and but the leases are. While my recommendation personally is try not to lease a car for more than 3 years. And maybe 36,000 or 40,000 miles, because you pay beyond the limit of the miles if you're a high mileage driver. But it's a lot cheaper than financing a vehicle at 5% or 6% for 3 or 4 or 5 years. That adds to the burden of our monthly costs, quite frankly, and the consumer's monthly costs besides whatever else they're paying for a month.
Well, I think that's a decision that everyone has to make. I think
that's correct.
The thing with leases are the car is not yours at the end of the term, and if you just, and I know people who just lease them for, like you say, 24, 30 months, just turn them in and get a new one, and don't think twice about it. Others buy the cars at the end of the term,
well,
and in that case, usually the mileage doesn't really matter, because if you're buying a car, they don't care about those extra miles, or they shouldn't care about those extra miles. But the price, the buyout price, is also the determining factor. So you're still paying interest. It's just on what are you paying interest on a fraction of the value of the car. You're paying interest on the entirety of the car if you're buying it and financing it. So I think that the thing with the car market and among other things is that the cars, and we've discussed this before too, you and I have anyway, is that cars are way better built than they ever were. So having an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old car now is totally, you're not
acceptable.
You're not risking,
It's totally acceptable.
Yeah. It's reliable. It's still reliable transportation.
Let me jump in on the 10-year car ownership situation, because I have several of them, or two or three.
Yeah, some are 30 years old.
The best thing, the most important thing that I can discuss in owning a car through 10 years of use is to watch out for and be aware of and try to prevent rust from starting up in the parts of the car, components of the car, which is exterior parts mostly, and probably underbody, like brake lines and items like that, from rusting and becoming dangerous during that 10-year period, which is something you won't see at all until it happens. I once lost my brakes on the Massachusetts Turnpike in my 2000 Eurovan. This was probably 8 or 9 or 10 years ago. I didn't totally lose them, but I lost them to the point that the brake pedal mostly went to the floor before anything started to help me slow down. And parts that were failing were the brake lines, and they were rusted when I got it into a repair place, and they had to replace all the brake lines.
You bring up a very good point, because I had a similar situation a couple years ago in what was then something like a 15-year-old, very nice, very well-maintained Mercedes GL wagon, and the car was, and still is, mint, but I was driving down the road, and at 35 miles an hour, pushed the pedal, and it went to the floor, and the brake lines were gone. And I think this is the risk of cars that sit, and I know your Eurovan gets a lot of use at certain times of year, but then, you know, for months, we don't see it around town.
Right.
And I think cars that sit long periods of time, not being used, having been used during the winter and maybe not,
they deteriorate. It's amazing what happens to them.
Yes.
You talk about wear and tear, not having thinking about wear and tear occurring when you park a car for 6 months, even if it's in the wintertime and use it in the summertime. Funny things go on in the wear and tear of componentry and bodies and whatever else, especially if the car is parked outside. That
drive
is sort of a safety situation, and I'd like to bring up something, interrupt this conversation part, and bring up something about the new cars, all of which seem to have these toggle switches in them between the seats for their emergency brakes. And I wondered what would happen if you pulled one of those toggles up while you were driving. You know, we used to have a pedal down. Many big cars may still have pedals down, left foot down on the side of the driver's side of the compartment. Some of the older cars used to have handles between the seats, and they were very mechanically effective. At least they felt that way. Now you have a toggle switch, and you pull it up. Does the emergency brake go on suddenly, and the rear wheels stop in turning because they're putting such a force on the wheels? It would be probably a smart thing for owners to try out their emergency brakes on older cars periodically, because sometimes the lines freeze up due to rust, and if they're cable connected, I do not know how they're connected now in the new cars, but if they're cable connected, it's very possible those mechanical backups called the emergency brakes might not function, as in the case of my VW van. I'm not sure I ended up trying that, but the experience was quite something when the pedal went to the floor and the car, the vehicle would not slow down significantly. It made me drive very carefully to the rest of my destination in that case, and I did it safely and got it fixed. But this is a safety check.
There's one good solution for that is electric cars with one pedal driving. They'll bring you to a stop.
If they have that adjustability, do all electric cars have that adjustability?
No, not well. That's where I was.
The Teslas do. I know.
Yeah. There's philosophies in electric car driving there.
But does a Macan, for example, do that? Do you think?
No, very little.
So little. That's that comment is a good comment, but it's not universal to the electric car.
It wasn't meant to be. It was meant more as a joke than anything else.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, old e-brakes also. Or the other thing would happen is you pull the e-brake and then it wouldn't release, and then you're stuck with the e-brake.
Right. Sometimes the emergency brakes, the e-brakes freeze when they're in the garage. I have found if I parked the car in a garage for, let's say, 2 or 3 months and I had put the emergency brake on inside, it's sometimes they don't release when you first try to have them release, and you have to almost move the car to get the emergency brake effect to release itself and let the tires roll.
I do have to say I miss those e-brakes, mechanical e-brakes on the rear wheels. I grew up driving front-wheel drive cars with e-brakes, and that was the only way to do a 180 fairly quickly and easily on a narrow
right,
street.
Exactly.
Was pulling the e-brake and turning it around.
Yep.
Do not try this at home.
So okay. Now your list, Jay.
Before we go to my list, I'm looking at bring a trailer, which every car enthusiast should be looking at every morning. It is an addiction warning, but if you do that, and you should start too, Robin, you'd see this morning, Robin, there is a 1975 Brickland for sale. And if you miss yours and bid above $15,250 right now, this one could maybe be yours.
What color is it?
It is white.
Mine was sun tan, which is effectively a light tan brown.
Unless
mine got repainted, that is not my vehicle. But I'm interested in the prices at
$15,000.
$15,000
with
it must be like new, because mine got restored. As those people who have ever looked up, what was the title of my thing on YouTube, listeners?
I can't
listen
remember.
Up. If you want to see the restoration of a Brickland that was in very deteriorated condition, listeners, it was mine, and it was hauled out of my garage, I think, 4 years ago, and it is on YouTube.
And if you wait a few more years, it'll be another car.
I think the viewership is in the millions.
You
can look up
world's worst
Brickland restoration or garage restoration of a Brickland. Some words to that effect might pull it up for you listeners. Okay? Okay, Jay. Move on.
Well, the restoration was good. The other one is a car that disappeared in 2010. The whole brand disappeared, and it was part of the GM family of brands. And with the debacle of the crisis in 2008-2009... the Saab brand was killed, and Saab had just come out, if you remember, with a very good-looking 9-5 Aero. It was a large, pretty good-looking sedan. I don't know if you remember that car, Robin.
I do remember, and I'm not sure I agree with your appeal of that particular car body style, but go ahead.
I thought it was an appealing large sedan. I don't say it was something that I would drive, but in the Saab world, it was certainly probably the most plush car that Saab had produced. And it might have had a great life, except that Saab ceased to exist pretty much the day the car came out. I don't know what the total number of cars were produced was. But I can tell you that this one right now is at no reserve for less than $5,000 with less than 3 hours to go. And if you're a Saab fan, this is something you should check out.
What year was that? 2015?
2010.
Okay. Since I have an older vehicle that currently is a garage because it's not drivable, it's my 1984 Mazda RX-7. Parts are not available or were not available through standard auto body shops for the damage repair that it required. And if you go buy some of these really old cars that are very visually appealing from their original days, but don't get in an accident. That's my only admonition to listeners on this, is do not get in an accident in any of these vehicles because you might find them very hard to get repaired.
So you're saying keep your eyes on the road is what you're saying.
Keep your eyes on the road and don't get in an accident like I did. To our audience, thank you for listening to this week's version of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.